introduction I've ever gotten. The best one was yesterday when I had to introduce myself. That was just straight up funny. You need to start laughing. Okay. I'm gonna absolutely every now and then turn to some notes that I wrote. I've actually been on the Bataan Death March for the last 2 weeks, speaking on average of every single day for the last 2 weeks nonstop. And the very first time I actually had an opportunity to look at the notes that I wrote this past weekend was this morning on my way back from Johns Hopkins. So I'm going to look back and forth, but I think I know what I want to say. But before I actually get into the message that I want to share, I sat here after the national anthem was over, I sat there and I just kind of looked over the sea of uniforms that are in this theater tonight, or in this auditorium, and I'm looking through my lens, and I want to tell you what I see. I wish you all could see what I see right now, and I'm not talking about standing up here and looking at about 200 Marines and friends of Marines and families of Marines and the absolutely wonderful Singleton family. Thank you for dinner tonight. It was absolutely wonderful. But through my lens is this. We've never been at war this long before. 0.04% of the nation wears any branch of the service's uniform. 0.04%. There's 310 million Americans today. 0.04% wears the uniform. Wears the cloth. And if you're a United States Marine, that's less than 1/10 of a single percentile will ever wear the uniform of a United States Marine. So as I sat here and I looked at this audience, and here's the lens I'm trying to put into your own head right now. And I'm looking, and the majority of this audience joined the Marine Corps after we were attacked. You could have done anything you wanted in your life. This is the first time in our nation's history that we are an all-volunteer force. And it's the longest we've ever been at war. You could have done anything you wanted in your life, but you chose to put on the uniform. You chose to meet somebody that wore blue pants with a red stripe, and you walked into a federal building, and you stood before a commissioned officer of the Armed Forces of the United States, and the American flag was at your back, and you raised your right hand, and you said those immortal words, and it was at that very moment you just swore your life to an idea, to a flag, to free people. So when I sat up here and I heard the national anthem play, and I sat down and I looked, and it just, that's kind of how it hit me. I wish you could see what I see right now through that lens. It's awe-inspiring. I'm humbled. I'm privileged that I get to serve in this capacity. I'm privileged that I get to serve you, because that's really how it is, because you support us and we accomplish our mission. So this is humbling. It's never a chore. It's always a privilege. So I just wanted to tell you right up front how I felt about you and what I see and how I see it, and it's really, truly inspiring. So that's the lens that I'm looking at. I gave a speech or a set of remarks. I was asked to speak right after I assumed the position as a 17th Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. And it was out in California, and it just happened to be a group of martial arts instructors and martial arts instructor trainers. About 30 of them or so. And they were getting ready to graduate. A lot of them were earning their red stripe. And they had the whole staff and the chief instructor and all the instructors were up on stage with me, and they asked me to address the audience. And I was about, I don't know, 45 or 50 minutes into my remarks at the graduation. And the chief instructor, he got up. They started walking off the stage. Started walking away, and I'm talking. And I kind of stopped, and I looked. I go, "Hey, Gunny, where are you going?" He stopped, and he turned around. You know how all the Marine Corps martial arts instructors are, right? Kind of turned and squared off like he was going to kick my ass, right? So he stopped, he turned, and he gave me that grin, and he goes, good haircut, Sergeant Major. And I looked at him and I go, well, why didn't you get one before this? He said, before you started talking, I didn't need one. That's a true story. And by the way, the sergeant that's kind of sitting like right where General Mullen is sitting stood up and started clapping, which forced everyone to stand up and give me a standing ovation. It ended my remarks and I left. And I only share that because I've only been talking for about 3 or 4 minutes, and I just looked at a half a dozen students that are sitting there, and they're looking at their watch, they're shaking it, and they're tapping it to make sure it still works. Shame on you. And I get it. Hey, Sergeant Major, don't make an already long day longer. It's stinking 1914. I got it. Deliver a message of practical importance, and let's be on our way. So I'll do my best to strike a balance between those competing interests. Okay, everybody? But hey, once the hole under the nose starts going, you never know where I'm going to go with it. I don't even know where I'm going to go with it right now. But you know what? I don't ever go anywhere with, you know, being in this absolutely wonderful position that I get to serve without giving everybody, the audience that I am privileged to stand before, and kind of give a quick state of the Corps. Shame on me if I didn't tell you how we were doing, where we are, and kind of what's going on. So as of right now, as of this morning, 194,000 active duty Marines, 39,000 reserve component Marines, 21,100 United States Marines, as of this morning, are forward deployed in harm's way. Of that 21,100 that are forward deployed, 9,000 of them are in Afghanistan. We are forward deployed. We are forward engaged. We are shaping. We are training. We are deterring aggression. We are responding to every crisis, every conflict, and every contingency around the globe. We've stepped in, we're leaning forward, and we're ready to execute humanitarian assistance and disaster relief right now. We're ready to lean forward and get ready to go out and do tactical recovery of downed American aviators if the time calls for it. We're doing non-combat evacuation operations. We're reinforcing every single embassy around the globe. We're not just doing a few regional and theater security cooperation missions. Last year alone, we did 200, as a matter of fact, we did over 200 regional and theater security cooperation missions. And if you're wondering, Sergeant Major, what the hell is that even all about? Well, we were supporting 75 different countries. And we were working with, and I know we have four of our absolutely wonderful international NCOs and staff NCOs with us here tonight. And I understand our very first female, and I believe from Bulgaria, is that correct? Well, welcome aboard. What are regional theater security cooperation missions? We're out there doing bilateral, trilateral training. We're partnering with our friends and our allies all around the world. 200 separate regional and theater security cooperation missions. All at the same time, we're doing counter-piracy operations. We are executing it. For the last dozen years, we have been executing an absolutely flawless counterinsurgency campaign. And when you measure, how you measure success in a counterinsurgency, political, military, economic, social, cultural, information operations, infrastructure, rule of law, justice, healthcare, education, in every single metric since General Nicholson and the Mebbe were there in 2009, to the time when Lieutenant General Mills took over as the 1MEF-4, and then turned around and handed it off to General Tulin, and then General Tulin handed it off to General Gurganis, and General Gurganis just handed it off to Major General Miller and a wonderful Sergeant Major named Sergeant Major Barry. Back to the 2MEF forward rotation already. They are absolutely laser focused on continuing to do the transitioning of districts and giving the lead to our Afghan National Security Force. So with all the things that we're already doing, plus how well we are actually and absolutely doing in Afghanistan, we're fighting an absolutely perfect counterinsurgency operation. On top of the counterinsurgency operation we're doing right now, We have the 15th Muse afloat. The 15th Muse is the CENTCOM Theater Reserve, and ladies and gentlemen, the Central Command Theater Reserve area of operation is all those things in the Middle East, to include and in and around the Horn of Africa, Yemen, places like that. The 26th Mute is presently operating in the 5th Fleet's area of responsibility, which is the Arabian Sea. The 31st Mute is afloat, and they're out in the Western Pacific and doing the entire Pacific Rim, and they are doing that bilateral training, and they are partnering up with all of our friends in that region of the world, South Korea, Japan. The Australians are close to our partners right now. So that's what's happening in those regions of the world. We also have, we've re-energized and re-kicked the unit deployment program. 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, 3rd Battalion, 6th Marines have posted their flags in Okinawa. And 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marine is on the launch pad. They're going to be leaving here very soon. And a company from 3-3 is going to restart the Darwin, Australia rotation. So one of the companies from 3-3, once they land in Okinawa, is going to go straight into Darwin. So we've re-kick-started our UDP program. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention our absolute wonderful reserve component entity, part of the total force. For the first time in any war, 100% of our reserve component is activated and or deployed during this long war. Right now, tonight, we have 4,500 reserve component Marines either activated or active duty, standing guard, doing exactly what it is they're supposed to be doing. So just for my own edification, do we have any Marines in here right now from the reserve component? Put your hand up. Okay, not a problem. But long gone are the days, I better not hear it, about being weekend warriors. Those days are gone. Get it out of your lexicon. No longer is it the strategic reserve. It is absolutely the operational reserve, and they have been doing an absolutely wonderful job. So I just wanted you to be in the right mindset when we're talking total force. Now, with all the things that are going on, we are busy. We're at war. We're at war for the longest time we've ever been in our nation's history, going on 12 years, and we have a lot of challenges going on. We've got fiscal challenges, we've got sequestration, we've got the drawdown, we're going from 202 down to 182,100. We're going to be losing about 20,000 Marines between now and the end of 2016. So there's a lot of challenges, and there's a whole buttload more challenges going on that I'm not even going to talk about, because quite honestly, you don't need to worry about it. I need you to be focused and worried about that Marine who's sitting on your left and the right. Don't worry about those other challenges, because the Commandant, myself, the Assistant Commandant, all the wonderful general officers we have in the Marine Corps, the Deputy Commandant, we've got it for action. We're making everything absolutely happen. So I'm not going to burden you with all that. Even with all the challenges and every place that we are around the world right now, it's all at a time. And when we're drawing down, it's all at a time when the world is not getting any nicer. Remember that, put that in the back of your head, because as I speak on a few other points tonight, it's going to come to a head. It's all going to make sense at the very end. The world's not getting any nicer. We need each and every single one of you in the fight. Now, as the Commandant shepherds the Corps through these tumultuous times, he is absolutely laser focused. He is juggling 79 glass chandeliers at any one time. He is focused on full spectrum battle equipment, which is from the helmet to the feet. Everything that is put on your body, that wraps your body, that's in your hands, the scope that's on top of the rifle, the bullets that go into the magazine that goes in the rifle, so you can deliver the business end to our foes. He is focused on full spectrum battle equipment. He's focused on ground combat tactical vehicle strategy. He's absolutely focused on the fifth generation supersonic stealth to radar, delivers precision munitions, joint strike fighter. Focused on. He's focused on the energy efficiency initiatives. He's focused on us pivoting to the Pacific. He's focused on the redeployment, the retrograde, the reconstitution, and the resetting of all of our equipment and all of our resources coming out of Afghanistan. He is laser focused on the all the pillars of institutional readiness. High quality people, unit readiness, infrastructure sustainment, facility sustainment, restoration and modernization, and providing capability and capacity to the geographical combat commanders. We are busy. We cannot afford to lose any of you. We need you to be clear-headed, strong in mind, body, spirit, and social. You see how busy we are? Lots of challenges. The world's not getting any nicer. I need every single one of you in the fight. So in a nutshell, that's the quick state of the Corps. Does anybody, at dinner tonight, I had a wonderful opportunity to sit with the Singleton family, and the Sherlock Holmes came up. I'm not talking Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law, modern day Sherlock Holmes. I'm talking old school Sherlock Holmes. Does everybody know who I'm talking about? Very analytical, really smart, right? Okay, so it was a couple months ago, I guess. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm in my office in my house, and I was working on the computer. And funny as it is, Tom and I were shooting emails back and forth about 2 o'clock in the morning. And my TV was on in the corner of my office, and Sherlock Holmes came on. Old school, Basil Rathbone, black and white, circa 1950. Are you all with me? Okay, so I stopped. I kind of pushed away from the computer. I said, I'm going to watch this for a few minutes just to get my head right. So let me set the stage. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson went on a camping trip. They set up their tent, and they went to sleep. And a couple hours later, Holmes wakes up Watson. He says, Watson, look up and tell me what you see. And again, very analytical people, right? They can't just tell you what they see. Very analytical. He goes, well, astronomically speaking, there are billions of planets and potentially millions of galaxies. Astrologically speaking, Saturn is in Leo. Theologically speaking, it is evident that the Lord is all-powerful and we are small and insignificant. Time-wise, it appears to be about 3:15. And it appears we're going to have a beautiful day tomorrow. Why? What does it tell you, Holmes? Holmes is quiet for a second. He goes, Watson, you idiot. Someone has stolen our tent. If you didn't laugh, it's because you didn't get it. And I'll tell you about it later. And you know what? Quite honestly, I wasn't going to use that, but it actually works out with kind of what I want to talk about right now. I mean, only because we talked about Sherlock Holmes and it just came to my mind. I got this. Sick mind. So here's what it is. I guess what I'm trying to say is the obvious is sometimes hard to see. Hey, sergeants, put your hands in the air. Thank you. Sergeants, did you know that you are responsible to and responsible for 82% of the entire enlisted force? Did you know that? 172,200 active duty enlisted Marines in the Marine Corps out of 194,000 take. 89% of the Corps is enlisted. You, sergeants, responsible to and responsible for 82% of the Marine Corps. Staff sergeants, put your hands up, please. Thank you. Did you know that you're responsible to and responsible for 92% of the entire enlisted force? 92%. Gunnies, would you please put your hands up? Thank you. Gunnery sergeants, you are responsible to and responsible for 97% of the entire enlisted force. Master sergeants and first sergeants, please put your hands up. See how it got smaller and smaller and smaller as I went up rank. You are responsible to and responsible for 99.03% of the entire enlisted force. Wow. Think about it for a minute. The obvious is sometimes hard to see. Check this out. How many times has a master sergeant or a first sergeant been promoted? At least 8, right? And if you're like a second award Lance Corporal, maybe 9, right? Let me ask you something. How many times did you ever stop and go, wow, that was a pretty neat thing that was just read to me? What motivating words were on that piece of paper? Wow. Did you ever sat down and defined the entire appointment letter, promotion warrant? There are 10 words in the very first few lines of the promotion warrant that define its context. It defines what you're supposed to do. You all know how the promotion warrant goes. To all who shall see these presents greeting, know ye that reposing special trust and confidence in the fidelity and abilities of, and Michael Barrett, I do appoint you a staff sergeant in the United States Marine Corps, 1 June, you therefore, you know the words. You hear the words in the very first 3 lines. You hear the word special trust. Define unquestioning belief in your integrity, strength, and abilities. Then you hear the word confidence, self-reliance, assurance, and boldness. That's how that's defined. Then you hear the word fidelity, which defined as strict observance of or faithfulness to promise. Then you hear the word abilities, and defined as power or capacity to act. You hear the word diligence, and defined as constant in effort to accomplish. And my favorite 4 words, it's at the very end of line 8 and the start of line 9. It doesn't matter if it's the NCO's promotion warrant or it's the staff NCO's promotion warrant. One says I do strictly direct and one says I do strictly charge, which by definition is the same. Those 4 words combined are defined. And the Commandant of the Marine Corps directs you to carry out the organizing, energizing, and supervision. To dominate and determine the course. To train and lead, having responsibility for. That appointment letter, that promotion warrant, is defined. It gives you the authority to give and to receive more responsibilities. That is the definition of the enlisted promotion warrant. Gives you the authority to give and to receive more responsibilities. Because service as an NCO or service as a staff NCO or as a senior enlisted leader, it's a privilege. And it is a privilege founded on integrity that brings with it great responsibility. And if you're anything like me, and my senses tell me that you're exactly like me. Most of the times when you become a non-commissioned officer or a staff non-commissioned officer, one of those things that our commanders will do with you is he will ask you to raise your right hand and they will ask you to reaffirm your pledge, your oath. And you'll raise your right hand and you'll stand in front of that wonderful commissioned officer. He will have you recite that you will promise that you will swear to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, You know the words, and it ends with you saying, "So help me God." It's at the very moment you've just done something. I don't know if you're aware of this, but every time you do that, you just pledged, swore, all your means, all your talents, and your very life to a flag, to an idea. Who here, and please don't, this is a rhetorical question, has actually sat down, other than Sergeant Major Gary Weiser, I know this gentleman for 30 years now, has sat down and actually read the Declaration of Independence? But that's not enough. And then you studied the 56 men who affixed their name to that document. And you saw everything that they gave up and everything that they sacrificed. And then after reading that declaration, you read the Constitution. And then you read the first 10 amendments, which is our Bill of Rights. And then you finished reading the other 17, so all 27 amendments. And then you studied the 40 men who actually put their name on the Constitution. And you get done studying those 27 amendments, the Constitution, Declaration, and you define it. When you read through it, and I've read through mine 1,000 times, as a matter of fact, I've been carrying the Constitution with me since the very first day I raised my right hand and swore my allegiance to an idea. I wonder what the hell I just swore to. You ready with the definition of this is? Free people who live in a free society who get to come and go as they please. That's the definition of those documents. The promotion warrant, the appointment letter, gives you the authority to give and receive more responsibilities. You raised your right hand and you swore and you pledged all your means, your talents, and your very life to an idea, democracy, free people live in a free society, get to come and go as they please. That is pretty wow when you really stop to think about it. What you just did when you accepted that promotion from that commissioned officer is you said that you were ready to receive that appointment. You said that you were going to reaffirm your pledge and give your life to this nation, and that you accept all the responsibilities that come with it. That's what you've done. And for our senior enlisted leaders, they've done that 8 or 9 times. Our sergeants have done it at least 5 times. Our staff sergeants at least 6. Just think about that for a minute. So when you think about all the things that we're doing, we're all over the world, 21,100 Marines. We're doing all those things that I just talked about. We're in Afghanistan, we're slugging away. We've got all these challenges, we're drawing down. The world's not getting any nicer. You know what your responsibilities are. You would think that we were perfect. Because nobody in this room had to accept that promotion award. You all could have said, "No, not for me. That's not for me." But you all said, "Hell yeah, give it to me. What's next, coach? Put me in. I'm ready." We're not perfect. We're not perfect. And we have allowed to let slip inside our perimeter some insurgents. I like to call them slimy, disgusting interlopers. And I'm talking in the form these interlopers are in the form of drugs, alcohol, domestic violence, criminal mischief, sexual misconduct, operational stress, force preservation deficiencies, hazing, suicide. Those are those slimy, disgusting infiltrators. That is the insurgence that is inside our wire today. Now, I'm not saying we're plagued by it. I'm telling you, it's inside our wire, and you all know it. So we have accepted a certain challenge. We accepted a promotion. We've raised our right hands and we have pledged that we're going to do something about it. So here's the deal. You know what Marines are really good at? We're really good at finding, fixing the enemy in place, and killing them. We are awesome at that. Because we know what the enemy looks like. Okay, I just told you what the insurgent looks like inside of our own perimeter, right? Drugs, alcohol, domestic violence, criminal mischief, sexual misconduct, operational stress, force preservation deficiency, suicide, and hazing. It's in our perimeter. Okay, you know what it looks like. Now fix it in place and destroy it. That's what you're tasked with. That's your charter. Because you've accepted that promotion warrant. You've raised your right hand and you swore all your means and your talents to defeating and destroying the enemy. Foreign or domestic. That's domestic. That's who you are. So, I'm not going to talk to you today, tonight, about leadership traits and leadership principles. I'm not going to talk to you about core functional leadership actions when you find out that disgusting interloper is in your face and then you're kind of going to go after it. I'm not going to talk to you about how to reduce societal ills or societal issues. I'm not going to do that. Instead, I think I'm going to talk to you about being a catalyst. I'm going to talk to you about being a catalyst as it pertains to enhancing unit effectiveness. Because after all, when you break down the promotion warrant, it's about responsibility. Your job, your task, is to enhance unit effectiveness. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to constantly be taking and making assessments for the rest of our life. That's what you need to do. All right. We're going to do a self-assessment tonight. We're going to do a self-assessment, and we're going to do a team assessment. And the great thing about the assessment I'm going to do with you is I'm asking you to keep it to yourself. So I am not going to put a single Marine on the spot tonight or any one of our wonderful international staff NCOs or NCOs. I'm going to ask you, in your mind's eye, to assess yourself, and I'm going to ask you to assess your team. I want you to go back, with your body being here, so let your mind go back to your unit while you're doing this assessment, and I want you to assess every single Marine that you work with. Every single person that's on your team. Okay, is everybody ready?
Yes, sir.
Clear your mind. I need it to be clear. I don't need you to be thinking about who's going to be voted off, survivor next. I don't need you to be thinking about any of that crap. Clear the matrix. Clear the mind. Self-assessment time. And be honest with yourself. And be honest about the Marines on your team. Okay, you ready? Assessment number one. Do you enforce the promotion warrant? Now, before you can really answer that question, I need to tell you exactly what a corporal, sergeant, all the way through sergeant major is and does. Because you already know the definition of the promotion warrant. It's about giving and receiving more responsibilities. Corporals and sergeants. I know we have a couple corporals in here because I've seen them. Corporals and sergeants, you are the backbone of the Marine Corps. Sergeant Major Weiser, how many years have you heard that term?
31.
I've heard it for 33 years. That NCOs are the backbone of the Marine Corps. For all my sergeants sitting right here, by a show of hands, how many of you have heard that term before, that NCOs are the backbone of the Marine Corps? Put your hands up. 100%. You serve as part of the vital link between your commander and all your officers and all your enlisted Marines. So, as I'm about to read off every rank, in your mind, do you enforce and are you allowed to carry out the promotion warrant for which it was written? Are you allowed to? Do your commanders and staff NCOs let you be what the promotion warrant says, and do you enforce the corporals and the Lance corporals and the PFC's promotion warrant? Staff sergeants. Staff sergeants are frontline leaders in their occupational field. responsible for the proficiency, training, and administrative issues within their platoon, section, or team. So staff sergeants, do you enforce your promotion warrant? Do your platoon commanders and your gunnies and your first sergeants allow you to perform to exactly what's delineated in your promotion warrant? Do you enforce your promotion warrant? Gunnery sergeants, are a senior enlisted leader and technical expert in their occupational field. They are the enlisted advisor in all administrative, technical, and tactical requirements of their MOS. So, Gunny, same question. Do you enforce your promotion warrant? Assessment number one, do you enforce it? Are you allowed to? Master sergeants. Master sergeants are the principal technical experts in their occupational field. They are the primary enlisted assistant and advisor to the commander in all administrative, technical, and tactical requirements of their MOS. So, Master Sergeants, do you enforce your promotion warrant? First Sergeants. First Sergeants are the principal enlisted advisors to their company commanders. The primary and foremost requisite is outstanding leadership combined with an exceptional high degree of professional competence and the ability to act independently as the principal enlisted assistant to the company commander in all matters of the organization. So, First Sergeants, are you enforcing your promotion warrant? Master Gunnery Sergeants are the senior technical experts in their occupational field. You are the primary enlisted assistant advisor to the commander in all administrative, technical, and tactical requirements of your MOS. So, Master Gunnies, are you enforcing your promotion warrant? And are you allowing all those subordinate ranks to enforce theirs? Sergeants Major. Sergeants Major are the principal enlisted senior advisors to their commanders. The primary and foremost requisite is outstanding leadership combined with an exceptional high degree of professional competence and the ability to act independently as the enlisted assistant to the commander in all matters of the organization. And I will tell the sergeants major the same exact thing. Are you enforcing the promotion? Are we allowing our subordinate Marines to do exactly what that promotion warrant says that they have the responsibility to do? So that's the very first assessment. Do you enforce your promotion warrant? And be honest with yourself. Because if you are not allowed to, damn it, jump up on top of someone's desk and let them know. That's what we're paying you to do. Enforce the promotion warrant. Because what I want everybody to leave here with tonight is I'm not going to tell you how to suck the egg and make those nine societal ill stop. I want to eviscerate them by getting so far to the left of stupid stuff happening in the Marine Corps through this self-assessment, these things won't pop up anymore. So let's not try to fight these societal ills. Let's get so far to the left of them that they'll never come up again. And it starts with enforcing the promotion warrant and the words that are delineated in that wonderful document, which, by the way, hasn't changed in over 200 years. Think about that for a second. Okay, assessment number two. What are the indicators of effective small unit or the indicators of effective leadership? I'm not putting anybody on the spot. They are proficiency, discipline, esprit de corps, morale and motivation. Those are the indicators of effective leadership. Those are indicators to determine how well your unit is. It's a report card. It's a report card that every single commander is graded on. Those five areas. How do you know? Again, we all know what the enemy looks like. We know how to find them. We know how to fix them in place. And we know how to kill them. How do you know if you have a deficiency if you do not understand the indicators of effective leadership? You have to understand them first. Okay, so let's start with proficiency. How do you know when you have a deficiency with proficiency? I'm a poet and don't know. Did you hear that? It's okay, that was fun. How do you know when you have a deficiency in your unit's proficiency? How about the last time you all went to the rifle range, everybody qualified? This time when you went to the rifle range, only 66% of your squad qualified. Would that be a deficiency of proficiency, yes or no?
Yes.
How about when you went to the field, let's just use a rifle company as an example, you went to the field and you couldn't make any of your timelines, your FDC and your forward air couldn't put bombs on target in a timely manner, would you say that they lacked proficiency in putting bombs on target and time on time targets, right? Yeah, it's a decline in how well you do something. Well, if you don't know what the indicators are, you won't know if you have a deficiency. So proficiency is an example. I just need you to understand what the indicators of effective leadership are. The second one is what again? Discipline, right? How do you know if you have a deficiency in discipline? You know, we can walk into any command across the entire Marine Corps, and I can spend, it'll only take me an hour and a half, tops, to truly understand the command climate, the tone, the conditions of the command. Take me an hour and a half, just by walking around. You can tell how good a unit is in an hour and a half just by walking through the motor pool, walking through the armory, walking through the barracks, walking through the CP. You can tell by the way a Marine carries himself. You can tell if they give you a greeting of the day. You can tell by how they salute. You can tell by the cleanliness of the area. Tell by how they park the vehicles, you can tell by how clean the weapons are, or you can just walk right into the battalion adjutant's office, grab the damn legal report, open it up, go right to Alpha Company and go, holy crap, not one minor offense report in the last quarter, not one blotter hit in the last quarter, no pending NJPs, no NJPs in the last quarter, nobody pending court-martial. Would you consider that to be a pretty good company, discipline-wise? Yeah, hell yeah, I would. Then you turn the folder to the next page and it's Bravo Company. And there's 9 minor offense reports just from the past weekend. And there's 3 blotter hits just from the week alone. 4 pending NJPs. 3 last quarter. 2 pending court-martials. Would you say there's a discipline issue in that company? You're damn right. Who singularly is responsible for the command climate, the tone, the temperament, and the conditions of that company? Someone just blurt it out. Who is singularly responsible?
We are.
The commanding officer and his first sergeant. Singularly responsible for the command climate of that company. Now we're talking battalion or regiment. Is that regimental commander or is that battalion commander, right? If Alpha Company is doing that good, but Bravo Company is doing that good, would you say there's a deficiency somewhere? See why it's important to understand the indicators of effective leadership so you know how to go after a deficiency, but you need to first understand it. The third one was what? Esprit de corps. Yes? What is esprit de corps? Esprit de corps is the collective morale. It's the collective morale of the entire organization. How do you know if you have an esprit de corps deficiency? I don't mind that you don't answer. I just hope you're thinking about it. But how do you know if there is a deficiency in esprit de corps? In fighting, staff don't work together, if it was First Sergeant Mullen and First Sergeant Barrett, and he did better than me on a IG or some kind of inspection, and in my heart and in my mind, a little bit of me just died, there's an esprit de corps problem. I should be running up to First Sergeant Mullen going, "Great job, brother, you freaking crushed it. How did you do it?" Instead, a piece of me died. There's an esprit de corps issue in your command. But you can't get to the deficiency unless you can understand it and you know what they are. What's the fourth one again? Morale, the individual. How do you know when you have a morale issue? It's kind of like esprit de corps. But there are things that you can look at. When I walk around and I say, let me see how good an organization is. I recently spent time with a company that had won every single Marine of the Quarter and NCO of the Quarter awards in the entire battalion for the whole year. It's kind of nuts, isn't it? That's crazy. It just so happened that company commander just happened to be the Lethwich Award winner, too. Starting to put two and two together. So I met this Marine. I pulled him aside. It was one of the corporals. It was a corporal. And I had just learned that they had won every single NCO of the quarter, every Marine of the quarter, and just how well they were doing. And I asked him a question. And I said, "Hey, were you one of the Marine of the quarters or one of the NCOs of the quarter?" And I was blown away by his response because it told me everything I needed to know about this unit. He said, "No, I was not a Marine of the quarter. I was not an NCO of the quarter." I go, "Well, you surely have appreciation or editor award or something." He goes, no, Sergeant Major, I sure don't. And I went, "Oh." He goes, "Sergeant Major, just because I didn't become Marine of the Quarter or NCO of the Quarter or didn't get a letter of appreciation or an editor award and an impact accolade," he goes, "Okay, got it." He goes, "I wasn't one of the MVPs, or MVPs." He goes, "But I'm still on the championship team." And that blew me away because you know what that said about his character in an instant? It was all about the team. I didn't need to know anything else about that company. But that one single corporal educated, he taught me. I didn't need to be an MVP Sergeant Major. I was on the championship team. That's pretty awe-inspiring. That are things that you pick up by understanding the indicators of effective leadership. So that was assessment number two. Assessment number one was what? Are you enforcing your... And assessment number two is, do you understand the indicators of effective leadership? Okay, I need you to... Because this all adds up. This is like math. This is like leadership math. I'm going to add up like five things here. Five assessments. And then there's going to be an equals at the very end of this. The third assessment I want you to take. Do you possess and do you demonstrate enduring trust qualities? So let me run those down for you. So here's still part of the assessment. So you're still assessing yourself, and you're still assessing your team. Everything you start, you finish with excellence. Everything you start, you finish with excellence. Because if you do, and you're competent. That's an assessment. Are you competent? Next. Everything you do is for the team's success. Kind of like that story I just told you. Everything you do is for the team's success. Because if you do, and if you are, that makes you committed. You're committed to the team. You're committed to the mission. Next portion. So it's competent. It's committed. The next one is, can you be depended on every time? Even when it's inconvenient. Pick the most inconvenient time there can possibly be. I know what it is. You ready? Staff sergeant. Married staff sergeant. Saturday morning, 02 in the morning. Can you put your head there for a second? On Friday, you and the platoon commander, the company battalion commander, the sergeant major basically gave it to the company commander, the first sergeant, to do the liberty brief of your company. The company commander said, two commanders, don't screw this up. Give a good liberty brief this weekend. No incidences. Let's all come back and go to the field Monday. Hoorah. So when the platoon commander and staff sergeant were given their liberty brief, they said, all right, hey, everybody, come on. You all know right from wrong. Take that $20 bill. Put it in the bottom of your shoe. Everybody show me your arrive alive card. Come on. And everybody showed you the arrive alive card. And put it in the bottom of your shoe. Don't lose it. And remember, guys, ladies, if you find yourself, you've had a couple of drinks and you find yourself stranded, call me. We'll come right down there and get you. Well, surprise. Saturday morning at 02, you're laying in bed next to your spouse, and you get the phone call, and it's Lance Corporal Barrett again. You've probably all lived this, haven't you? And it's Lance Corporal Barrett again.
Hey, Staff Sergeant.
And you know the drunk talk.
I'm at the Joshua Tree Lounge.
Yeah, for those of you who've been on Highway 62 in Joshua Tree, right? Yeah, hoorah.
I'm at the Joshua Tree Lounge.
Okay, no problem. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm drunk. I can't drive home.
You got $20 and you have your Arrive Alive card? Because on the back of the card, it's got the name of the Topps Cab Company. We can get you home, no problem.
Lost my shoes.
And in your mind, you're going, God damn it. And he says, I'm stuck and I'm stranded. So when it's the most inconvenient time. Can you be dependent on every time? Now, being dependent on is not you going, damn it, Barrett, it's always you. As soon as you do that, what did you just do? You lost them forever. Because Lance Corporals talk to who? Everybody. As soon as they say, you remember when Staff Sergeant said that if things got tough to call him and he would be right there? Yeah, he's so full of it. As a matter of fact, he's a dick. You just lost them. You just blew it. But if you take that phone call and you're like, first of all, are you okay? No, I'm fine, Sessa. Are you in a well-lit area? Yeah. Hey, will they let you stay inside until I get there? Yeah, probably. And you put him on the phone with him real quick. And then you drive there and you get there and you make sure he's healthy and he's safe. And then you put him in the car that you don't start chewing him out. No, you tell him to recline the chair back. Well, first you ask him, here's a bag just in case. Lean the chair back and go to sleep. We'll be back to base in 30 minutes. All right, brother, thanks for calling me, because I'd rather be picking you up at JT than where. Yeah. Identifying you by unzipping the bag and seeing you laying there, your lifeless, dead, cold body. Thanks for calling me. So can you be depended on every single time? Because if you can, if that's you, if you can say yes, that makes you consistently dependable. Is your next portion of the enduring trust quality assessment? Is your integrity unquestioned? Let me tell you about integrity. Your motto in your mind is there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. That's what you live by. That's your mindset. Let me tell you another thing about integrity. Integrity is like virginity. Once you give it away, it's gone forever. You're not getting it back. Integrity is your last name. It is your word. It is your bond. Don't give it away. Don't assume. And don't compromise. Because if your integrity is unquestioned, then you are of the highest moral and ethical character. Assess that. Assess that with your team. That was your third assessment. So, the first assessment was, do you enforce the promotion warrant? Second assessment was, do you understand the indicators of effective unit leadership? And then what to do in the event there's a deficiency? Now kind of you know what to do. And by the way, let me just go back to the second one for a second. When there is a deficiency, there's a deficiency because of one of three reasons, and one of three reasons only. It's either a knowledge deficiency, a skill deficiency or an attitude deficiency. You just have to figure out which one it is, and then head down, ass up, and drive forward, attack it, fix it in place, and kill it. And you will fix the problem, I promise you. All right, and I digress, and I move back to my fourth assessment. Fourth assessment. Conduct. How you carry yourself. Before you say, before you do, in your mind, do you ask yourself, what I'm about to do and what I'm about to say is moral, ethical, professional, safe, and just? If you don't have to pause or hesitate to answer that question, which, by the way, your brain can process that in a nanosecond, just so you know, is what I'm about to say or do moral, ethical, professional, safe, and just? Yes. Then you can do it, because it is. But if you have to pause and hesitate for even a split second, it's probably what? Wrong. It absolutely is wrong. Does everybody here, and let me give an anecdote to kind of make the point. How many of you here know what a parrot is? Anyone know what a parrot does what? A parrot talks. A parrot can only say things that it's what? Heard. Parrots mimic. But parrots can only mimic things that it's what? Seen. Okay. Parrots are also indigenous to Central South America. Very colorful birds. Very expensive animals. Is everybody with me? Okay, I just gave you a classical education on what a parrot is. Good? See me at the end of this and I'll sign the ticket and you can take it to the education center. And you're good. So this lady walks into a pet store and she sees a parrot in a cage. And underneath the cage it says $5. Now, her, like you, have a classical education in what a parrot is, right? They're supposed to be expensive animals. So the lady walks in, $5, and she walks right up to the store owner and she says, "What's wrong with the bird?" Store owner immediately goes, "Well, you caught me. I'm just trying to get rid of the bird. You see, the bird sometimes says some unsightly things. I'm just trying to get rid of the bird." "Well, why does it say unsightly things?" "Well, the bird grew up in a house of ill repute, a house of prostitution. I'm just trying to get rid of the bird." The lady thinks about it and says, "Well, really, how bad can it be?" So she buys the bird, she takes the bird home, she puts it up in the living room, she sits down, she kind of waits for the bird to soon do something. A couple minutes goes by and the bird does what birds do, kind of, doing this thing. Squawks and it says, "New house, new madam." A little offended at the implication, she thought, "Well, you know what, that's not so bad. That bird can be retrained." And she goes about her business. A couple hours after that, her two daughters come home from school. And the bird, doing what birds do, and squawks and says, "New house, new madam, new lady." All of them a little offended at the implication, but then went, "Well, that really isn't so bad," and they go about their business. A couple hours after that, the husband, the father, Steve, comes home from work. He walks in, the bird goes, "Hi, Steve." "Oh, you're feeling me, aren't you? Look at you now." That you never know who's watching, you never know who's listening, but I promise you, every one of your Marines is watching everything you do, and they are absolutely listening to every single thing that rolls out of the hole under your nose. I'm telling you right now, whatever you do, a Lance Corporal will do it times 10. True or false?
True.
If I did this, the Lance Corporal will do this. True or false?
True.
And they'll have a dip in their hat bag and a freaking thing in their ear. True or false?
True.
Absolutely true. If what I'm about to do, if what I'm about to say is immoral, unethical, unprofessional, unsafe, or unjust, don't do it. And if you're standing next to somebody who's thinking about doing it, put a boot to his neck. And stop it. Isn't that easy? By the way, I'm being figurative. not literal in the sense of the boot to the neck thing, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. That, ladies and gentlemen, that's the conduct factor. Okay? So self-assessment number one was, are you allowed to enforce your promotion warrant, responsibility? Two, do you understand the indicators of effective leadership, proficiency, discipline, esprit de corps, morale, motivation, to where if there's a deficiency, it's going to be in either knowledge, skill, or attitude, right? The third assessment was on enduring trust qualities. Are you competent, committed, consistently dependable, of the highest moral and ethical character, and everything you do coalesces a team. You're all about the cohesion of the team. The fourth assessment was on conduct, your conduct factors. Moral, ethical, professional, safe, just, right? You're running all these things down in your head. You're self-assessing your team at the same exact time. Because the fifth area of assessment is the one area that every single commander focuses on more than anything. Is my organization optimally combat ready? Don't let the word combat fool you. It's part of the entire Marine Air Ground Task Force. It doesn't matter what element you're in. Combat, optimally combat ready, means the same thing in the wing as it does in the logistics group, as it does in the ground combat element, as it does to the supporting establishment, as it does to the reserve component, as it does, and you got my point. Optimal combat readiness means the same thing no matter what element you're in the MAGTAC. So, did you know, and I'll use the infantry as an example, did you know that there are over 1,000 individual and collective training standards and over 12 mission essential task lists required for a rifle battalion to pick up, go through the entire pre-deployment training program, the ITX, go on a 7-month deployment, do the deployment, and come home? Over 1,000. What an enormous task for a battalion commander. Would you agree? There's really 5 areas that a commander really focuses on. Because he's got all of his wonderful company commanders, his senior enlisted leaders, platoon sergeant, platoon commander. He's got all those wonderful NCOs to ensure those 1,000 individual collective training standards and those 12 medals get accomplished. Here's what he's focused on, or what she's focused on. Are my Marines, and this is what you should be focused on, because if your commander's focused on it, you should find this fascinating. Are my Marines, and you could say this staff sergeant, you could say this sergeant, are my Marines combat physically fit? Physical fitness is not running the PFT or running the CFT. That's not physical fit. Anybody can run a 300 PFT, I got news for you. I'm 50 years old, I've had a double microdiscectomy, I got 2 bulging discs in my neck, I haven't felt my left arm in 12 months. I get out there because I refuse to stink and quit. I get out there, run out, I get out there, do my damn pulse, I get out there, do my crunch. Anybody can run a 300. But here's what optimally combat physically fit is. It's wrapping 80 pounds of body armor around that body, that warm pink thing. Boom, 80 pounds of body armor. It's grabbing that weapon. It's being 100 degrees outside. It's doing a movement to contact. It's getting there, it's fighting across the objective and killing the enemy. Then it's exploiting the enemy through fire and maneuver. And then it's picking up and moving and chasing them down and finding them at the next objective and killing them again. Where a 4-hour patrol in Fallujah was only supposed to be a 4-hour patrol, but it turned out to be 4 days long. Have you prepared your Marines' bodies to endure something to that magnitude? That's being combat physically fit. Again, it doesn't have to be the ground combat element. It can be any of the elements. Picture a helicopter mech crew chief who spins the wrenches, who just got shot through the forearm 3 days before from ground fire, from a SAP attack, after running a medevac, and 3 days later, 110 degrees on the flight line in Leatherneck at Camp Bastion, fixing his helicopter. That's combat physically fit. Just been shot through the arm, and he's back on top of the helicopter 3 days later, turning a wrench in 110 degree temperature. That's combat physically fit. Commander's also constantly focused on, are my Marines cognitively fit? This is still part of the self-assessment. Are you cognitively fit? Cognitive fitness is the thing that sits on top of your shoulder. Cognitive fitness comes in many layers. Are you mentally agile? Are you being trained to handle multiple tasks in a chaotic environment, making critical decisions at critical times? Is that how you're being trained? Is that how you're training your Marines? Cognitive fitness is also, are you developing and building mental toughness? What is mental toughness? Mental toughness is being able to handle deprivations, climatic conditions, sleep deprivation, food. And I'm not asking you to be cruel or inhuman to your Marines. I'm just asking you, are you building their pain tolerance level to be able to endure sleep deprivation, food deprivation, climatic conditions, heat, and things of that nature? The third sub-portion of cognitive fitness is martial spirit. Are you developing your Marines to be martially spirit? And here's what I mean by that. No matter what room I walk into, I immediately assess multiple avenues of egress. I need to know how to get the hell out of the building real quick. At the same time, I'm always looking in the four corners of a room for weapons of opportunity. Always, constantly. That's just the way I roll. And then I always look for the biggest person in the room because I need to know who I'm going to have to kick the hell out of first. And just so you know, disrespect, so you were the biggest guy in here. I just wanted to be up front. But there were three things that I will promise anybody who messes with one of my Marines, myself, or my family. They will never go to a library again, they'll never go to a nice restaurant again, and they'll never buy running shoes. And here's what I mean by that. I will take the eyes ring out of your freaking head. Guarantee it. I will knock every tooth out of your face. You won't need to go to a restaurant. And sneakers, you don't need them because I'm going to break the load-bearing bones in so many places you'll never get to walk normal again. Are you developing your Marines the right kind of martial spirit that I am not going to lose? I know how to get out, I know weapons of opportunity, and I'm going to fight. Are you training them that way? But most important portion of cognitive fitness, it's important to be mentally agile, it's important to be mentally tough, it's important to have the right martial spirit, but none of that stuff is any good you don't possess equanimity, the ability to remain calm under stress or pressure. So critical. As a growing up as a sniper, knowing when and when not to squeeze the trigger. Equanimity. There was a couple years ago, I was stranded. Here's a perfect example of equanimity. And I learned from a stewardess. What's the politically correct term today? A flight attendant. Thank you. Shame on a flight attendant that worked the ground crew, did the ticket counter and stuff. So we were stranded. We missed our flight, and our flight was canceled. It was just an awful, miserable time. Now just picture a line of us, a bunch of weary travelers standing in the line, and we're waiting to get up to the counter, and this ticket counter person was taking care of somebody. She was moving us as quick as we could so we could make a connecting flight and kind of move on. So just picture us on our own. When all of a sudden this guy who was on our plane and before it got canceled, and he came walking past the entire line, he walked up to the counter, he said, "I'm flying first class, I need to go next. Can't make this up." So I was ready to leave. I was like third or fourth in line. I was ready to leap into action, jump out there, big S on my T-shirt. I was ready to leap into action. And I said, no, because you learn by watching. And I stood there and I watched this wonderful lady. She said, "Oh, sir, I understand that." She goes, "But all these people were in front of you. And so would you please find yourself back in line? And I will get to you as soon as I can." Very pleasant. She was spot on. She was, her fingers were going a mile a minute. She was making stuff happen. And the guy gets pissy with her, and he said, "Do you know who I am?" Just like that. And as calm as could be, she reaches down, and she picked up, the microphone for the intercom for the whole airport, and she said, "This is ticket counter, or United Airlines ticket counter A14. There's a gentleman here who does not know who he is. Could someone please come up and claim him?" Next, I've never seen anybody turn purple before. But he was beyond red and purple. And I'll never, and he let out an expletive that I would not ever say in front of a woman. But it started with F and it ended with U. And the lady grabbed up her thing. She goes, "And sir, you'll have to get in line for that as well." He stomped off. I never saw him again. But the 10 or 12 of us that were in line, she expedited us with great haste, moved us all along. We all made flight. I never saw the guy again. Nothing gives one person so much advantage over another than to remain calm and unruffled through all circumstances. It's great to have that cognitive ability. It's great to be mentally agile. It's great to be mentally tough. It's great to have that great martial spirit. But none of it will work right if you don't also possess that equanimity. That is cognitive fitness, okay? The third portion of optimal combat readiness is moral fitness. And we've already talked about moral fitness. It's all part of the moral. It's all about the conduct. There's never a wrong time to do the right thing. But there's one more entity of that. There's going to come a time in your life where somebody's going to demand your honesty. Give it to them. You should be demanding honesty always. Because if anybody ever demands your loyalty, they're asking you to lie, cheat, or steal. Are you listening to what I'm saying? Demand honesty, and others will demand honesty of you, and you will earn their loyalty. Anybody ever demand your loyalty, give them your integrity. It's that easy. We talked about that already. There's never a wrong time to do the right thing. Be the moral high ground. The next portion of the assessment on optimal combat readiness is, do you possess the knowledge and skills required to do your job? Do you possess the knowledge and skills required to do your job? And here's where it gets fun. The job of the Marine below you and the job of the Marine above you. Because if you do not, then your self-assessment, you're not where you need to be. You have to have the knowledge and skills required to do your job, the job of the Marine below you, and the job of the Marine above you. That's what the commander is relying on. It's part of being optimally combat ready. And the last portion of this self-assessment and team assessment, are you personally fit? And if you're married, is your family fit? In the domains of financial fitness, emotional fitness, social fitness, spiritual fitness, and not necessarily spiritual by way of religion, spiritual inside of what's in your heart. Because if all those things are fit, you are optimally combat fit. You are optimally combat ready. So self-assessment. The very first self-assessment and team assessment was, are you enforcing your self-assessment 2 was, do you understand indicators of effective leadership, proficiency, discipline, esprit de corps, morale, motivation, and knowing that if you smell a deficiency, it's either in knowledge, skill, or attitude. The third area was enduring trust qualities. Are you competent, committed, consistently dependable, of the highest moral and ethical character in everything you do? Brings the team together. The fourth assessment you did was on conduct factors. Are you moral? Are you ethical? Are you professional? Are you safe? Are you just? And the last one was, are you working towards being optimally combat ready? Are you training your Marines to be optimally combat ready by being combat physically fit, cognitively fit, morally fit? You have the knowledge and skills required to perform your duties, job below you and the job above you, and that you are personally, and if you have a family, that your family's a fit. That is the self-assessment tool for yourself and for your team, because if you ever want to get to the left of those societal ills what you're going to need to be. That's what you're going to need to do. That's how you're going to need to inspire your Marines. Because then when it's all said and done, you will have, when you add that you are working your promotion warrant, if you understand the indicators of effective leadership, if you possess and demonstrate enduring trust qualities, if you are of the right conduct, and if you are optimally combat ready, you are totally fit. That's Marine total fitness right there. And you are fit in the domains of mind, body, spirit, and social. That's how you're going to get to the left of all those evil, slimy interlopers. Because it's too late. You know what we're doing? We're all over the world. 21,100, 9,000 in Afghanistan tonight. 3 MUs afloat. 2 battalions on Okinawa. Special Purpose MAGTAF 13 in Sigonella, Italy. Special Purpose MAGTAF crisis responses in Spain tonight. We've got people leaning forward, getting ready to do things right now. We cannot afford to lose a single one of you. We need you all in the fight. We don't have time for these interlopers. You need to self-assess yourself. You need to self-assess your team. You are responsible. And it all comes down to it. That promotion warrant, you are responsible. You're responsible for all of this. You should be constantly taking and making assessments. That's your job. You said, when you accepted that promotion, you said you were going to do every one of those things. I'm going to leave by telling you that we will continue to live hard. We will continue to train hard. We will continue to fight hard. And we're going to provide our nation the capability to contain crisis, to fill the gap, and to hold the line. And we don't know when or where or who we're going to fight next. But ladies and gentlemen, you have to be ready to leave tonight. You should be always taking and making assessments constantly. And then improve on it. Constantly be improving on it. And before I open it up to any questions, if there's going to be any questions, because something tells me I've gone about 16 minutes over, is this. I want you, and this is where I was talking to you before dinner. You were talking about cows, deers, and horses. I think I know where you were going with that. So let me beat you to the punch. I want you to be all manure. Am I on point?
Yeah, you're doing pretty good.
I want you to be manure right now. Now, listen. Don't be writing home, dear mom, sorry, Major Marine Corps called me poo. I need you to all be manure for a second. Now, I grew up in upstate New York. I grew up on a lot of farms. I worked on a lot of grape farms. And one of the things I used to do is I used to shovel manure. So I have become an expert on poop, okay? What happens when you take manure, you spread it, you cultivate the ground, and you water the earth? What happens? Things grow. Shit happens, right? Right? Now take that same pile of manure, put it in the corner of a barn. What do you have? A big pile of stinky poo taking up space, stinking up the area, right? Take everything that you learn in the academy that you are presently in. Spread yourselves. Cultivate those young Marines. Water them. Sit back and enjoy the show. That's how easy this job is. Isn't that wonderful? So there's nothing wrong with being manure. That's all I really had to say tonight. My message tonight to you is not to be manure. But my message to you tonight was you accepted the responsibility that's now in your hands. It's all yours. Constantly be taking and making assessments because we're never going to get to where we want to be by remaining where we are. And the only way we're going to do that is by constantly taking and making assessments. Okay?
Yes.
Sir, that's all I have. Gentlemen, that's all I have. And I'd be more than happy to take any questions, but I will warn you right now, it's 2028, and I went a few minutes over. Questions? Yes, sir.
Union Sergeant Major Sean Petty, Marine Corps Cyber Command.
Right on. I think I saw you down there not too long ago.
My question is, drawdown in Afghanistan. What are your feelings and what do you see for the Marine Corps resident PMEs as far as switching back to more drill-based and basic Marine Corps knowledge versus the combat effectiveness we're focusing on now?
Excellent question. Did everybody have a chance to hear his question? First of all, the Commandant, I'll tell you right now, he said, when we don't have a lot of this, and he's referring to money, we're going to do more of this. And he picked Brigadier General Mullen for a reason. We picked Sergeant Major Ken Kahn over for a reason to come up here to Marine Corps University. We picked Sergeant Major Cherry to be Director of Quantico for a very good reason. We are going to continue to educate even at the more cycle break. You see the construction that's going on around this place? Last year, the Commandant injected $125 million into education, into the university, so that we could have world-class instructors, world-class curricula, world-class faculty for world-class students. So I'm here to tell you right now, we are not going to cut back one bit. The Commandant's not going to cut back one bit on educating our Marines, because if you think education's expensive, try ignorance. We are not going to cut back on education. I'm going to just let you know that right up front. And it's my feeling and my senses as we come out of Afghanistan, first of all, we have put our Afghan national, I've been there from the very beginning over there in Afghanistan. The Commandant and I go back over there about every 3 months, and we see the progress. We saw the operational formula. We saw the operational design when General Nicholson started in 2009, and each of the commanding generals has taken that operational design, operational formula, to the very next level every single time. Major General Miller now has the responsibility of doing the final transitioning of districts, the governance, and all those other metrics that fall underneath counterinsurgency back into the control of the Afghan National Security Forces. They are absolutely doing a wonderful job. They are Afghan good. They will never be a United States Marine Corps. They will never be a Marine Corps. But you know what? I have watched them do things. Every time I would go out on patrol with a Marine unit that was partnered up with Afghan National Security Forces, I consistently watched our Afghan National Security Forces do something new or do the right thing every single time I went out on patrol. General Dunford has said it. Before him, General Allen said it. Before General Allen, General Petraeus said it. The Afghan National Security Forces have developed to a state where they are absolutely ready to take over the lead for their country, to secure their own country. And my senses tell the same exact thing, because I've watched the progression since 2009, going back and forth every single year all the way up until now. Okay? So I feel good about it. And as you know, as we come out of Afghanistan, we are refocusing, rebalancing, and we are pivoting to the Pacific. Okay, that's where our roots are, amphibious roots. So as I told you earlier, when I gave you a quick the state of the Corps, 31st MEU is in the Western Pacific, the Pacific Rim, and they're doing bilateral training, and they're partnering with all of our friends in that region of the world. We've got, in the old days, the old UDP, Unit Deployment Program, we used to always have 3 battalions on deck. 1-3 is on deck now. 3rd Battalion, 6th Marines is on deck, and 3-3 is about to be there. So we're getting back. We're starting to pivot ourselves back into the Pacific, just like the national strategy has directed us to do. So coming out of Afghanistan, we are not going to degrade our education, because we know that we need to ensure that our NCOs, our staff NCOs, and our junior officers stay educated to take on all those challenges in an ever-increasing and complex world. So we're not going to be screwing with our education. Pivoting to the Pacific. I don't know any other way to answer the question. Does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Yes, sir. Evening, you're going to have to use your man voice.
I'm Sergeant Speaks. I'm from the Marine Corps Information Operations Center.
Well, right down the street.
Yes, sir.
Just cut the ribbon.
You mentioned earlier that the world is not any nicer. My question to you tonight is, what's your personal philosophy on your personal leadership philosophy on the Marine Corps' code of ethics, and how would you advise our enlisted leaders today to implement a code of ethics?
I would tell you that every single thing that I talked about tonight, everything, because if you do not have, if If you do not know who you are or where you're going or what your Marines are doing or where your Marines are going, you have got to establish that initial baseline for yourself with what are those enduring trust qualities. Those are absolutes. You never compromise the absolutes. Are you competent? Are you committed? Are you consistently dependable? Are you the highest moral and ethical character? Everything you do is for the team. My conduct is right. I'm moral, ethical, professional, safe. I'm just. That's the direction we need to be going in. That the things that are killing us right now is the exact theme that I wanted to discuss tonight. And that's on those the 9 societal ills that are impacting you. You spend, if somebody does something silly in your squad, you're going to spend 90% of your time on that one person. Would you rather spend 90% of your time on one person or 90% of your time on prepping for combat? What would you rather do? Absolutely. My philosophy on all that stuff is I am constantly taking and making assessments, and I hold myself, I never quit. I don't allow myself to quit. You have to be head down, ass up, drive forward kind of person. That's my philosophy. That's the way I do business. 29 hours a day, 9 days a week. That's it. Yes, sir. Oh, you're standing up to make everyone just shut up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to end the same way I started, and by telling you, it's what a privilege. It is humbling to be able to stand here, to be able to serve in this capacity, to serve people that could have done anything they wanted in their life, but you chose to put on the cloth of this nation, knowing full well what you were getting yourselves into. That's the wow factor for me. You didn't have to, you did. So I'm privileged and I'm humbled. Thank you so very much. God bless every single one of you and always faithful. Thank you.